Live from the American Gulf Coast, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
Yes, it is. And boy, I've been waiting for this hour to come here this morning. I'm really, really excited about the prospect of starting off a new year, of course, with our great friend Bridget Blitch. She is a partner at Taylor & Associates, a law firm in Florida. And if you've been with us for any length of time, you know that Bridget brings us invaluable information every month here to the program, and we really deeply appreciate that. Not only is she bringing invaluable information this morning, but she's also bringing an invaluable friend to the program, our good friend and sponsor, Mark Walton from Gorilla Safety. Yeah, we're going to take two issues and kind of mash them together. We're going to take the law, the legal aspects of trucking, your rights, and how they relate to the ELD mandate and your compliance and your company's compliance with the mandate. We're going to take the law and mash it together with Mark's world of the actual ELDs and the A boards. Of course, Gorilla Safety was one of the few, if not the only, company offering the good old A boards before the deadline came. It's too late to get those now, but they really shoved out a lot of those A boards out onto the road before the deadline of the 18th. So all of that together, it's going to be a pretty interesting and informative program, and I hope you're tuned in. Also, they want to talk to you more than they want to talk to me, as usual. So the phones are open, and if you'd like to get in this morning, it's going to go fast. Now is the best time to call, 615-292-6366. Protecting your livelihood with Bridget Blitch, kicking off 2018 with our good friend Mark Walton in just a moment.
Now my life's ambition is to quit this mean old road. Get a job with Roy Acuff on the Grand Ole Opry Show, then I'll be gone. I'm really gone. I'm a ex-truck driving guitar picker, and I'm a moving on.
The mission of the St. Christopher Fund is to help professional drivers and their families who have financial needs due to medical problems. Assistance may be in the form of direct payment for medical services or prescription drugs, assistance with expenses while recovering, or negotiating price reductions with medical providers and hospitals. If you or someone you know is in need of help due to an illness, or perhaps if you would like to make a donation, go to DaveNemo.com and click on the St. Christopher Fund.
Hi, this is Sandra Sanford, Vice President of TA Truck Service Road Squad. You know, while there's never a good time for a breakdown, they always seem to happen at the worst possible times and under the most adverse conditions. I just want to assure you that when you find yourself stuck in need of roadside assistance, you can count on TA Truck Service Road Squad. From the friendly and knowledgeable agents that answer your call and diagnose your breakdown, to the highly skilled technicians that perform a quality repair, we understand that your profitability is based on getting your truck rolling and keeping it rolling. Just dial 800-824-SHOP, and from the moment your call reaches our dispatch center, you'll have our team's full attention. That's our promise. Because when, no if, you break down, we show up. TA Truck Service Road Squad, 800-824-SHOP.
TA Petro, full service means at your service.
We're going to launch right into the first edition of Protecting Your Livelihood with Bridget Blitch from Taylor & Associates right now. Hey, Bridget, good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning, Dave. Happy New Year to you as well.
I would normally do this, but I'm going to ask you to do the official introduction for Mark.
Well, certainly, and it is my pleasure to bring Mark Walton with Gorilla Safety with me today on the air. We've had an opportunity to talk about some of the calls and issues that he's seen over the last several weeks since the ELD rule came into effect. We've compared notes and put together a program that I hope will showcase and provide guidance to the audience on the technical issues regarding the software. And in turn, I will offer my insight as to some of the legal issues and landmines that can come up with now the ELD being implemented into the vehicle. So, Mark, thank you so much for being with us here today. It really is an honor to have you.
Thank you for the introduction, and I'm looking forward to this.
I'm going to kind of stay out of this for the most part because I don't know that I could add anything, but I think maybe I'll just throw something on the fire here to kind of get things moving, and that is the timeline. The December 18th compliance date deadline has been ingrained in our brains now, so we know that, December 18. But then there is April 1st, and Mark, maybe we could start off by explaining what happens between December 18th and April 1st, and what does not happen. And then, Bridget, obviously you're going to have some additional points here.
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a really good question, Dave. So dates are not they're not going away. We thought December 18th was the day, and now the CVSA has decided, they announced back on August 28th that they were going to document violations, but they weren't going to put truckers out of service roadside for not being compliant with an ELD. And that's really important to understand that they're still saying that they will issue citations, but the vast majority of them that we see are warnings right now. So, and you can go to the CVSA's website and read the release that they have. But what we're seeing is, you know, it's just a chance for everybody to kind of learn and get used to the system, get all the kinks worked out. And I think that was a really wise move on the CVSA's part.
And I'll add to that that this grace period is to ensure that really there is not an impact on the carrier's SMS scores. So while these warnings are going to be reflected, if you were to look up their carrier CSA profile, the points are not going to be assessed. And I can say at least from Florida's perspective, that they're not going to be issuing any monetary citations. They're not going to be putting any carriers out of order or out of service, and that they're going to be following that guidance as well. Now, I have not heard of any other states not adhering to that guidance. But I can at least speak for Florida.
And I think that's an important point, Bridget, that guidance is guidance. Like, you shouldn't eat that. Okay, well, I'm going to eat it anyway. Okay, it's on you. So what I'm getting at is that the states are not bound, and the CVSA membership is not bound by any of this. It's sort of more or less just a, lack of a better term, a gentleman's agreement on a lot of this stuff. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah. So you have the states get funded to enforce the commercial motor vehicle safety regulations, and so they work hand in hand, obviously, with the federal government in implementing that and working with them. So I think that there's some, like you said, an agreement in form to honor this grace period based on that statement that came out.
You have to have the ELD, but Mark, there's maybe, you know, maybe like a little a riddle. What does an ELD and hazmat paperwork have in common? Well, you have to have it, but you have to have it within reach. You got to have that hazmat documentation on the seat next to you or in the door pocket somewhere where if something happens, you can grab it and go. The ELD is kind of the same. Just having it in the truck is not quite enough, right? It has to be properly mounted.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Dave. So one of the things that we're seeing is there are all sorts of different kinds of ELDs out there. Some are hard mounted, and the sole purpose of that particular piece of equipment is to be an ELD. Some of these are on your cell phone or on a tablet. These mobile devices have to be mounted so that a driver can see that at any time. And the mandate's pretty specific about it, that it has to be mounted in a position where the driver can see it from as he's seated. So one of the things that we see, and this is kind of a training thing, one of the things that we see is that the driver needs to have not only the phone or the tablet mounted there, but he's got to be able to see the app, right? So if there's an ELD application running on the phone and he gets a phone call over his Bluetooth, you know, headset, then he needs to be able to pull the ELD screen up and have that phone call go to the background like another application running on the phone in order for him to be compliant. So it's a really good question. There are a number of things that the motor carrier has to do to maintain compliance in addition to just, you know, buying the equipment and installing it. It's got to be used properly too, and that's one of the big things.
Boy, the devil's in the details, huh?
That's it.
Yeah.
Mark, are you seeing the carriers providing a hands-on training? So when it goes to those very specific issues, you've got a call coming in that the driver is getting instructed on how to make sure that software is not being interfered with and that ELD screen is up and running?
So what we're seeing is a wide variation of training and onboarding. Some fleets take the training very, very seriously and want to make sure that all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted. And some of them are, you know, it's just business in general, right? So some fleets are a little less concerned with the detail and they assume that everything's going to be just fine. But what we encourage the fleets to do is review the rule and what the fleet's obligations are, and really tie their training into that. So some of the things that ELD providers use are YouTube videos or webinars or things like that really help train drivers directly. And some ELD providers train the fleet manager so that they can. It's sort of like a train the trainer type of concept. And that is sort of how they disseminate that information.
One of the other points that we're going to get to, and by the way, the phones are full, as you can well imagine, and we're going to kind of run through a couple more points here to kind of get our bearings, and then we're going to go straight to the phones because I know you guys are anxious to talk to our listeners. Bridget Blitch, Mark Walton are with us, and we're talking about the legal ramifications now of the ELD requirement. Mark, I know that Bridget would like to have a discussion with you about unidentified driving time. And maybe we should start by identifying what unidentified driving time is and then how to handle that.
Yeah, so the ELD is required to keep track of any driving time when the driver's not logged into the ELD. So, for example, if there's a case where a mechanic is taking a truck to, you know, on a road test or driving it across the yard, or who knows what the story might be, the ELD has to record that as unidentified driving time. Well, then the fleet manager's got to be able to assign that to a driver for the driver to be able to accept that. So these unidentified driving segments of the day can accumulate, and it's up to the fleet manager to get those assigned out to avoid any kind of malfunctions firing off or fines, you know, when they get an audit, something like that. So this is a really important thing to keep track of.
Did you have anything that you wanted to throw in there on that, Bridget?
Yeah, and so what is it? Do you have any best practice recommendations on how quickly for internal operations that the carrier should be spotting that unidentified driving time and making sure that that's appropriately labeled?
Yeah, what we recommend is that's reviewed on a daily basis. This is probably the most cumbersome piece of the ELD requirement from a fleet perspective, that they do have to go in and monitor that and make sure that these things are assigned out. And they do have to go in on a frequent basis. So our our recommended best practice is to go in on a daily basis and review that before leaving for the day.
So to that end, it's probably one of the things that we would consider from a legal perspective is making sure that you have a right policy and procedures in place on the fleet side so that you have the right personnel assigned to making sure that your drivers, your fleet is ELD compliant and that you have that articulated in a process that's communicated and that each person is educated so that they can follow those instructions and ensure compliance.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They need to have a policy and procedure. It also has to be watched because a driver will, once this is assigned to the driver has to either accept or reject this unidentified driving time. And if too much accumulates on one particular vehicle, then that is flagged for roads at the time of roadside inspection so that the officer can see that there's an inordinate amount of unidentified driving time. So this is all kind of tied together. So that driver really, the right driver really needs to be able to accept that, that drive time.
Certainly, and it would make sense, too, that the more recent that you can capture and identify that time and should, let's say, come April, we have an actual violation issue. One of the things that, Dave, we've talked about in the past is when we want a data queue challenge those violations in the future, that is going to be key to making sure that we have the right policies, procedures, and supporting documents to show that we've been compliant. And so I think that will lead me, Mark, to my next discussion. One of the things that we've touched upon is what are the specific electronic features of the ELDs and how can carriers take advantage of them? And we have another lined up here like the pre-trip inspection, if you want to touch on that for a moment.
Yeah, sure. So ELDs come in all different flavors, right? And I make a joke that they're like shoes. You gotta decide if you want flip flops or boots or tennis shoes. What are you after? And some ELDs are strictly ELDs and they don't have any additional features. But some of them include things like electronic pre-trip and post-trip inspections, and those vary whether or not they're in depth or if it's just an electronic version of the paper. We see in the industry that there's certain enhancements that make it a little easier to track everything, make sure that the driver's completing the inspection properly at the right time, seeing alerts and things like that. And then we see the basic ones where it's just an opportunity for the driver to document it so he doesn't lose track and he can make sure that something's fixed before hitting the road and, you know, avoiding the fines if there was a repair required, that type of thing.
And that, I think that's a really important point because oftentimes those pre-trip inspections, depending on the carrier's obvious their policies and procedures, may not get immediately back to the carrier. So if there's an electronic medium for that information to get conveyed simultaneously, the carrier would be able to address that before the vehicle moves again.
Well, that's right, Bridget. And the one thing that comes to mind when you say that is if and when a driver gets put out of service roadside and something's got to get fixed, that needs to get reported back to the carrier right away. So if that is if that's done electronically, that all that is covered and handled, and then it's easier to document the repair to avoid, you know, any fines at the time of audit. So that's a really important feature for some of these ELDs.
Yeah, and so it can go both ways. You have to make sure that you have someone there monitoring that information and that doesn't go under the radar, but you use it to your advantage. You do have someone tracking that, and hopefully it will ensure that that repair is made and get that vehicle safely back on the road again.
That's right.
So another point that we touched upon is the driver qualification files and how can the ELD be useful for DQ files?
Yeah, so there are a lot of documents that carriers just generally have to keep on their drivers, on their trucks, around repairs, around, you know, like you said, the DQ files. Now that we're using electronics in the transportation industry generally, It's a great opportunity to go ahead and take advantage of some of the other technology that's available out there. And one of those is just being able to track the documents. But more than that, also create alerts so that you don't forget to run MVRs. You know, you have an insurance company come in and do a loss control visit or at the time of shopping for your insurance, and the insurance carrier asks you for a copy of your motor vehicle reports, but you haven't run them in forever, and all of a sudden you realize that you've got a driver with a suspended license. Well, now we can use electronic solutions to keep track of that and really help keep the trucking company organized. You know, I always make the joke that you use a system like this to manage your business instead of having your business manage you. And I think this is a really good opportunity for that.
Yes, it certainly is. And if, for example, a carrier was to get notification of an on-site compliance audit, maybe just even if it was just a focused audit, having that information there immediately accessible in that forum, that through that software, I think could be a beneficial tool just to help the carrier maintain compliance.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the other things that these ELDs have the ability to do is keep track of the supporting documents that are required by the ELD mandate. Everybody talks about the ELD and the ELD mandate, but nobody really talks about the supporting documents. So as you know, the driver has to keep the first and the last document of the day and up to six in the middle. And this is an opportunity to be able to stay organized and actually keep that so that at the time of an audit, then they can produce that for the auditor. So this is another really big opportunity to address another piece of the ELD mandate that not a lot of people are even talking about or even aware of.
Right, right. So there's a number of supporting documentation requirements, from the bills of lading to dispatch records to expense receipts, to payroll records and settlement sheets, and the list goes on here. Do you have any recommendations in terms of, just from a record-keeping perspective, the best way to get that information into the software, whether that's a scanner in the truck or whether that's getting all that documentation back to the terminal when the driver arrives at home base? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, so the mandate requires the driver show the officer upon request any document that he has on, you know, with him at the time. So my recommendation is to enter that into the system any way that they can as quickly as possible, so that they don't have to maintain, you know, 7 days plus current of these documents. So my recommendation is to use a tool that they could probably scan in on their mobile device or phone or tablet, whatever, and then send that to the back office. Now, some ELD providers or other fleet management solutions might have a way that the driver can enter that automatically for them.
Sure, sure. The use of telematics and making sure that we have not only the everything in the document side, but it's not all electronic. But at the same time, we want to have that available. So that's marrying up the technology, so to speak, can I think be beneficial and hopefully easier for the driver and the carrier to be compliant and keeping track of these documents.
That's right. This is all a learning curve, and everybody's got to get used to the new normal. So this is just one more way to make everybody's life a little bit easier and just another opportunity to take advantage of the technology now that we're being forced to use it.
Well, we are being forced to do something else. We are being forced to stop talking for just a little bit and listen to news and weather, which is coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Bridget and Mark, thank you so much for a great discussion, kind of a point-by-point walkthrough of some of the critical components of the use of ELDs. But as I mentioned, our phones are full, so let's go right to our callers when we come back from news and weather for the second half of Protecting Your Livelihood with Bridget Blitch. And of course, Bridget is a partner at Taylor & Associates. And Mark Walton is the COO at Gorilla Safety. And of course, Gorilla Safety is one of our sponsors here, and we are proud to have them. Don't forget, in the next hour, John Turner is going to be joining us for a discussion on the new tax law. Yeah, when it rains, it pours.
Now, back to the Dave Nemo Show on SiriusXM's Road Dog Trucking Radio.
What a great way to start the year off with great friends and friends who have a lot to bring to the table and to the radio. Bridget Blitch is with us. It's Protecting Your Livelihood. And Bridget, of course, is a partner at the law firm Taylor & Associates in Florida. And the COO of Gorilla Safety, his own self, Mark Walton, is with us. So we're taking the legal side and the technical side of the ELD. Let's just call it the situation and move on from there. But I'll tell you what, let us move on right to the phones now, because as I say, the phones are full, as we knew they would be. And we're going to start off with a question from Jim out of Arkansas. I mean, a question from Jim for Mark out of Arkansas. And then we'll flip over to you, Bridget. And Jeff has a question for you out in California. So first, and we take our calls in order, first to Arkansas and Jim. Hey, Jim, go right ahead. You have a question for Mark. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I was told by my safety director that if I buy another truck, that I would have to go to an ELD instead of using the A board in the truck that I have now. Is that correct?
That's a really good question, Jim. So the FMCSA is actually really clear about this. The requirement is you can move an AOBRD from one truck to another one, but if you grow your fleet, so let's say you have one truck and then you add another truck, then that new truck has to be an ELD. So the requirement is
okay.
It's just in any time you grow. Yep.
All righty. Thanks a lot. That's all I had.
Well, that was short, maybe not so sweet, but short. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Now, out to California, Jeff, I believe you have a question for Bridget.
Yeah, I got a question.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. I got a question about the ELDs for tollway drivers. Our company's telling us right now we don't have to do anything with it. We can still run the paper logs. And then also, once we deliver this RV to the dealership and we become a regular pickup truck again, do we still have to log?
So your question is concerning – oh, go ahead.
No, he's still there. We had to put him on hold because his phone signal was making so much noise. Did you catch everything there, Bridget?
Unfortunately, Dave, I didn't. Mark, maybe did you catch it by chance?
Yeah, I think the question is when he's using his vehicle is for driveway tow-away, and then he delivers his load, then he uses his vehicle for, you know, more traditional trucking operations, then what does he do about logs at that point?
Yeah, I off the top of my head, I need to look at the tow-away provision. I don't know, Mark, if you know that one off the top of your head.
Yeah, so there is an exemption for the driveway tow-away, but that would not be applicable to anything after that particular load was delivered. So without being the DOT consultant, my best understanding of this is that he would have to use the ELD after that load is delivered.
I don't haul anything but there's pickup trucks or RVs.
So that is all you do?
I just haul parts and boats.
So in terms of the RVs, Jeff, do you drive the RVs from one location to another, or do you pull the RVs or haul them?
I hook them to the back of my pickup truck. I just do pull along. And I'm under the 26,000-pound weight.
Well, Well, Bridget, my understanding in this regard is that's precisely why there's the driveway tow away provision.
Mm-hmm. So he's covered then, right? Since he does not go back to, quote, standard, unquote, trucking or haulage.
Yeah, and I would, you know, we can firm up an answer on that, but yeah, this general understanding.
Okay. All right. Well, Jeff, I'll tell you what, I know Bridget is a follow through kind of person, so she'll follow through with something, and maybe we can get that on later this week or early next week. Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah, and then maybe she could ask one more thing, too, is since I'm under 26,000 pounds, I basically don't need a CDL to do my job. If I don't need a CDL, do I even have to deal with any of this stuff?
Well, that's another one.
You know, that's a good question. And I would just like to understand your operations a little bit more before I could give you a firm answer on that situation, just because of the consequences of obviously, you know, not being compliant or not having a CDL or not having the ELD. So obviously, when I don't know the answers to all the questions, but I look them up and make sure you get the right direction or connect you with the right folks to get that DOT compliance question to you.
And then I have one more question. How does USHIP get away with not providing proof of insurance for all these drivers that are hauling loads on USHIP?
That's another one. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but I can certainly look that up for you.
Well, Jeff,
right,
in this
Thank
case,
you.
Three strikes and all three of us are out. As the man said, we'll get back to you on that. Well, Jeff, thank you very much. You have stumped the panel here this morning. Well, Bridget and Mark, let's keep moving. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and the one we didn't take earlier, and we'll be right back. And we have a couple of lines open now, 615-292-6366.
Sometimes you're the windshield. Sometimes you're the bug. Sometimes it all comes together, baby. Sometimes you're a fool in love. Sometimes you're the Louisville slugger, baby. Sometimes you're the ball. Sometimes it all comes together, baby.
Well, I've talked lately about how trucking used to be the old mom-and-pop truck stops with the best food and great service.
That spirit still lives at Sapp Brothers. Since 1971, the Sapp Brothers giant coffee pots have said welcome to generations of truckers looking for the real thing. And you'll find it at 17 Sapp Brothers from Utah to Pennsylvania.
At Sapp Brothers, the mission is simple and meaningful: to treat every customer as a guest by providing a clean environment, quality products, and a commitment to excellent service.
At Sapp Brothers, they do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
This is Tim Ashoff, president of Creek Carrier Corporation. At Creek Carrier and Schaefer Trucking, we believe that drivers deserve more. That's why, effective January 1, Creek Carrier and Schaefer are increasing pay for our over-the-road fleets and many of our regional and dedicated drivers. Our OTR drivers will start out earning 47 to 53 cents per practical mile, and with profit sharing, the top 50% of our drivers will now average over $73,000 per year. We believe you deserve more out of your career. Visit CreekCarrierJobs.com to apply now.
It's Protecting Your Livelihood. Every first Wednesday of the month, attorney Bridget Blitch with the law firm Taylor & Associates joins us on the program to answer most of your questions. We're going to head on to Illinois now. Bridget and Mark Walton, of course, from Gorilla Safety is with us. And Mr. Ed is with us on the line. Mr. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. I just have two quick questions for Mark. The first one is, he said the ELD had to be mounted and on, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. The ELD that my company is using does not have a night mode. and it is very bright in here after dark. So I turned the screen off. So am I in violation?
The way the mandate reads specifically is it says the commercial motor vehicle and visible to the driver when the driver is seated in the normal driving position. It doesn't say that the screen's got to be on, but it says that it's got to be visible. And maybe I would defer to Bridget on the legal interpretation of that. What do you think, Bridget?
I would think, yeah, and I would take the position that based on that provision that when you're going into the sleeper berth that rule wouldn't come right into effect, so you would be okay not having that screen on at that time.
When I'm driving,
mm-hmm.
Did I lose you?
No.
Well, and you're driving it. So you're driving at night, and the screen is coming on, and it's you're not able to dim the feature.
No,
the tablet.
No, it does not have a night mode.
Hmm.
No, it does not have a night mode to dim it down.
Yeah. So, Mr. Ed. So, what I would say from the technical perspective on an ELD, the reason why this has to be displayed is because there are a lot of alerts and alarms that, you know, are visual to the driver, letting the driver know if there's some sort of disconnection, if the driver's running out of time in the day, or, you know, coming up to the 30-minute break. Those things all get transmitted via the display. So if you actually turn that off, you're not going to get some of those notifications that are part of the mandate. I would venture to say you would have a hard time convincing somebody that it's okay to turn that off. There might be some other things that could be done, but that's the reason why this has to be displayed, I believe.
Okay, the only other question I had for you real quick is you said on the unassigned driving time has to go to the driver. Well, you know, shouldn't there be something if a mechanic is driving the truck for a road test or something? Why should it go on me if I'm on a 10-hour break or something?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'm glad you threw that out there because that needs clarification. At that particular point, the mechanic's the driver, so it needs to go against the mechanic, not you.
Okay. That's what I wanted to get clarification on there.
And Mr. Ed, let me follow up on the night mode screen issue, because it's really important that your visibility is not obstructed in any way when you're operating the vehicle. So I would go back to the carrier, your fleet manager, and advise them of the situation so that that you've articulated that this is interfering with my ability to have a clear view while I'm operating my vehicle because of the brightness of the screen. And I think that's perfectly an understandable and a safety issue. So my concern would be that you need to protect yourself. The carrier needs to make sure that you're protected and their interests are protected in the event that you get into a commercial motor vehicle accident. And one of the issues that's been raised is, well, that the brightness of the screen was not able to be adjusted, and that could be used against you or the carrier in the unfortunate event that an accident results. So, you know, aside from just having the technical component of it, you do want to make sure that is an issue that gets addressed so that your visibility is not in any way impaired.
Right. That's why I always turn the screen off for safety, you know.
But have you said anything to the company about that?
No, I will today, though. I'll bring it up to them.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because Bridget is correct. Unintended consequences, huh, Bridget?
Unfortunately, yes. I mean, it's like we say, the devil's in the details, right? And it just takes but one thing for those plaintiff lawyers to grab on to say that they were negligent. and allowing a small issue like that to become a big one. So we want to make sure that we address that right away and get the technology to correct that, or the a different tablet, whatever it takes to ensure that our driver is able to operate that vehicle without any interference.
I hate to say it this way, but if that ever something, and Lord knows I don't wish this on Mr. Ed, but if a thing like that ever came into court because of an accident or something, that would be one heck of an interesting courtroom argument, wouldn't it, on both sides?
Well, certainly you see the plaintiff's bar taking any violation of a commercial motor vehicle regulation and turning it against the carrier and turning it against the driver. So, you know, if you didn't have that screen up, then they would try to use that against you. And if you did, they would still try to use it against you, which means that, you know what, it's going to be worth the cost, the nominal cost from a compliance perspective and from a risk mitigation perspective to make sure that technology works in the vehicle and that it's not doing anything to compromise anyone's safety.
We're going to get back to our callers now. And Mr. Ed, thank you very much. That was a very interesting scenario that you pointed out. Out to Oregon now, and Nathan is with us. Nathan, good morning. Go right ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to ask, if you say like you were about 2 miles out or 2 miles from your yard and you run out of hours, would it be better just to go off duty or log off and then drive it back to the yard? Personally, I'd rather sleep in my own bed than sleep in the truck. I mean, how could you go around that? You know, is there any way of doing it without getting in? I understand from a insurance policy, if you get in an accident or something within that 2 miles, but would that just be on taking on driver's shoulders not to get in an accident in that 2 miles to get back to the yard?
Mark, do you want to take the ELD side, and then I can take the accident side?
Yeah. So that's a really good question, and this is one or a variant of a question that we get all the time. What do I do when I get stuck in a situation like this? Okay, so from a technology perspective and from kind of a compliance perspective, this is what I would tell you. First off, the device does have the ability to put you into personal conveyance or yard moves or something like that, but you the onus is still on you to use this thing properly. You know, you got to use a hammer to hammer nails, not to anyway. what I would tell you is, in that particular case, if you're 2 miles from your yard, I would call somebody at the yard that has additional hours to come pick up the truck and drive it back to the yard if you wanted to be 100% compliant. That's the real answer. Now, are there technical abilities to do something differently? Yes, but you would be outside of compliance if you flipped that thing to yard moves or you flipped it to personal conveyance. So that's what I would say. Bridget?
Yeah, and Nathan, what I would say is that if you took the risk of going that 2 miles to the yard and again, God forbid, an accident happens, the plaintiff's bar is going to take the position, well, you should not have been on the road at that time had you followed the hours of service violations at rules and not violated those provisions within those 2 miles, the accident never would have happened. I mean, that's a common argument that you get when a vehicle is on the road working out of hours or, you know, working in violation of any commercial motor vehicle safety regulation. So I agree with Mark. Your best course is don't take the risk. Get somebody else to get the vehicle. Don't be in violation of the hours of service violations, and don't run the risk that you'll give anything to anyone. God forbid, again, an accident should happen.
Nathan, boy, probably not the answer you wanted to hear, but hey, the truth is what it is. So thank you so much for calling. And we've had some great issues brought up on the program this morning. Mark Walton, COO of Gorilla Safety with us, and of course, Bridget Blitch with Taylor & Associates. And this is protecting your livelihood with Bridget every first Wednesday of the month. We are so thrilled to have you continue the series into 2018, Bridget. Now, let's head up to Illinois, and George is there. George, good morning, and go right ahead.
Yes. Is there any exemptions for oversized loads for hours of service? We pull oversized loads all the time. Right now, you have sunrise at 7:15, and it's sunset at 4:45. We can't run 11 hours a day with an oversize. And then they want us to take a half-hour break. So we're only going to be able to work 8.5 hours a day.
So, Bridget, I'm not familiar with an answer to that one. Maybe you are.
Yeah. No, and I was going to say I can't recall seeing any guidance or provisions on oversized loads, although that is a special creature when it comes to transporting oversized loads, and often, you know, the pre-trip planning that goes into that, I would say the carrier needs to take into consideration when they're pulling the permits and planning the routes that obviously the hours of service are taken into consideration, but I'm not aware of any exemption for ELD compliance for oversized loads. Dave, I might have my homework for me today with to get back to our dear friends here.
Yes. So, you know, the state of Georgia, you can't run a half hour after sunrise and a half hour before sunset. And then they want you to take another half hour off during the day. You can't run but 8 hours a day down there hardly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Right.
To be.
You know, I'm going to jump in and probably probably, and instead of jumping in the pool, I'm probably going to jump in the mud puddle here, George. I think the Specialized Rigging and Hauling Association asked for an exemption, and I'm going to say I think it was rejected. But, again, like Bridget says, I'll get back to you on that. I do recall a petition to get an exemption. But, Bridget, I'm not sure that that was granted. I may be wrong, of course.
Yeah, and I look up the answer when I don't have it in front of me to make sure folks get the right direction. And so I would, you know, certainly be happy to take a look to see, you know, what the history was on that petition. It makes sense, of course, but whether anything came of it, I'm not aware in the final rule there being any discussion or provision on that.
Exactly.
Well, the FMCSA has been pretty particular about the ELD not really being a new rule for, you know, for hours of service. Everything still falls back to the original hours of service rules, right? So if that's the case, the exemption for the ELD wouldn't necessarily expand the hours of service rules by themselves, right? So it's kind
right.
of an interesting question.
And that's an excellent point, Mark, that the ELD is now just the interface technology to report the hours of service, and that it doesn't change the regulation.
Well, we'll do more research on that, obviously. And, George, thank you so much. I think we're going to squeeze Donna in. Hopefully we have enough time. Donna, thank you for calling, but kind of talk fast. Go right ahead.
Yes, I have a quick question to you guys. On electronic logs, what is the maximum fouling distance? Or no, not fouling distance, excuse me. Startup time. Can you drive like 2 minutes to 5 minutes before the electronic logs kick in? My company is two, some is five, and some are 3 and 4 minutes before electronic logs kick in. Have a good day.
I'll go ahead and take that one, Dave. So the ELD mandate actually requires that the vehicle kick into driving at 5 miles per hour. It's not really a distance anymore. The AOBRD has some additional flexibility, but the ELD is 5 miles per hour in a lower threshold.
And that is where we reach our threshold. Wow, I can't thank you two enough. Bridget Blitch, Mark Walton, Happy New Year. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.